Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. You also might be listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined today by Colin Drew. On this Saturday show here on Sports Grid, we go game by game throughout the DraftKings and FanDuel main slate for Daily Fantasy on Sunday. Very fun week two, Colin, but just an absolute injury apocalypse. We lose Christian McCaffrey, we lose Saquon Barkley, George Kittle doesn't play. So, you know, really, Michael Thomas doesn't play. Just a total load of first-round picks who are out in fantasy football right now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I felt like we had dodged a lot of late news bullets as far as going into Sunday. Like, there just hasn't been any slate-changing news for the most part. But you had all those injuries happening in the middle of the slate. And then Tyrod Taylor getting, you know, the punctured lung and kind of surprise benching there due to that. And it was definitely a wild week too. I think combining that, you had some of the chalk bust for like the first time this season. Not all of it, of course, but Davante Adams had went off absolutely nuclear week one, and then he flamed out, left the game with a little bit of an injury, but he wasn't on a path to a great success before that anyways. So I think it ended up pretty interesting for tournaments. It was, you know, a couple close calls for me, but a decent week two main slate, which was nice.
Yeah, you know, it's always nice to get a couple W's under your belt, especially to start the year. You know, it's no fun to be going through heading into like week five and waiting for that first score. So on this show, what Colin and I are going to do is we are just going to go game by game, and we're going to just preview all of the relevant fantasy football plays. So starting with the Washington football team against the Cleveland Browns, despite that, you know, that week one molly whopping by the Cleveland Browns against the Baltimore Ravens, they are again favored by 6 or more points, depending on your book. I believe the FanDuel Sportsbook has it at 6.5. The main play, though, that I am interested in this game is not on Cleveland, Colin, and it is on the Washington football team with our boy Antonio Gibson, who seems to have pretty much taken that starting running back job in week two. Peyton Barber had only one snap and one carry in week two for the Washington football team.
Yeah, that was wild. That's probably one of the more frustrating things was week one, just being loaded up on this guy and then Peyton Barber getting all the second half work. And then week two, not having much exposure except in the late slate. And then he ends up getting the majority of the work. I think some of that is game script oriented. And it does seem like this is game script where the Redskins won't be well ahead. They probably won't be well ahead many times this year, but I do think Antonio Gibson is probably not game script proof. You know, if the Skins do pull ahead, they may still use Peyton Barber to just try to run out the clock. But I do think he's a pretty good value. I actually thought where you were going to go is Logan Thomas, who's second in the NFL in all tight ends and market share of targets. So his price went up a little bit since last week, but at 3,700, I still think despite, you know, not the best matchup, it's not the worst one either. And from a value perspective, he was the player on the Washington side that I think would kind of crack the most optimal lineups.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I'm just sort of thinking of Logan Thomas as chalk. Like I would actually expect that he is probably going to be the highest owned tight end this week in single entry and 3-max. I mean, maybe we will get some more of Darren Waller because, you know, we don't have Kelsey on the main slate. If Kittle does not play for the 49ers, we don't have Kittle. Mark Andrews plays on Monday as well. So, you know, outside of Darren Waller, there's no one that's projecting that well. And Logan Thomas is projecting in the top 10 of fantasy points, despite being all the way down there. So, yeah, I mean, I think Logan Thomas is the name that most people are going to click in single entry, 3-max, cash games, stuff like that.
Yeah. And on the Brown side, you know, not interested in loading up on them. Probably not a game I'm looking to stack necessarily. I think Nick Chubb did show that, you know, like, you know, in the first week, he had kind of been phased out of the game script because they were behind and Kareem Hunt played a lot. Chubb did show that he's still going to be kind of the main guy when they're playing from ahead. And so I think I'm not really interested in him at $6,900, but I do think he's the only guy I'd really be looking at.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that as well. I mean, maybe I will boost Odell in tournaments a little bit, you know, not a ton, but maybe a little bit. Then our next game that we have here to look at is Houston-Pittsburgh. I'm not really interested in playing anyone on Houston. David Johnson, Will Fuller does not really much matter to me. The guy who I am interested to get your take on is Diontae Johnson, who right now has recorded 32% of the Steelers' targets through 2 weeks, really does just like look like he is going to be Ben's go-to guy over Smith-Schuster. How much are you adjusting your priors for Diontae Johnson right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's now a couple consecutive weeks, and if that was the only thing, maybe you wouldn't want to adjust too much, but there was some kind of rumors and whispers as far as like Steelers camp coming into the season that Diontae Johnson might be the overall wide receiver one for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I do think at this point, they're still pretty close in terms of raw projection, but I do think it makes sense to have Diontae Johnson right there neck and neck with Juju Smith-Schuster, and at the price discount of $5,400, I think it makes him pretty compelling. I think James Conner is a little bit more viable than you do. I think in tournaments, he would be a pivot off of some of the guys that I think will carry more ownership. And he did kind of get the overall usage last game. He came in expecting maybe to be limited with the injury, and that didn't really limit him at all. Not seeing the same targets he'd seen over the previous two seasons with Pittsburgh, but I do think that he's in play in tournaments. And on the Houston side, a lot of it just comes down to whether or not Will Fuller's active. I think Cooks is probably priced at a point where you're not super interested regardless, but if Will Fuller is inactive, then obviously there are some more targets to go around there. And despite the matchup, David Johnson's price is still pretty compelling if Duke Johnson were to sit this week.
I kind of feel like the Houston guys might end up being like a value trap where, you know, they end up throwing for 227 yards and none of those guys particularly gets there. That's not a situation that you want to be over invested in daily fantasy, but I expect that some of those wide receivers will project well with no Fuller. So this game is fascinating for recency bias reasons, right? We have Derrick Henry, who underperformed in a very similar spot last week. And also we have Minnesota, who looks like really one of the worst teams in the NFL, but they have a 23-point team total, which is, you know, not terrible, certainly. And Adam Thielen, who was great week one, not great week two. What is your perspective on this game, Colin?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting in general. Week two, week three now, we're starting to know these teams a little bit better, but I think we still don't know them as well as we think we do. And so the teams that look terrible through 2 weeks, you know, some of those teams are going to bounce back and be fine. And so I think that is one thing. I'm definitely trying to lean on the Vegas odds still heavily in this case, opposed to leaning too heavily on my own personal opinions from what I've seen through the first couple weeks. And so I think you still got to be willing to take a chance on Minnesota skill position players. And I especially think Adam Thielen, despite not having the good kind of game script and game logs from last week that he did in week one, like he's still seeing 33% of the team's targets. He's definitely the go-to guy. And so I do think that some interest there. Derrick Henry was frustrating last week, but more so just on the results, less so on the actual usage. Like he's still the alpha in the backfield, and he's still going to be the guy that gets all the goal line carries. They just happen to get there with a highly efficient passing game. So I'm still willing to play Henry in this spot, despite the fact that, you know, there's a chance that he puts up another, you know, 10 to 12 fantasy point output. The ceiling is pretty high for him as well. At 8,200, you know, if he can put up 30 fantasy points or similar, I think that's definitely a guy that you're going to want some exposure to.
Yeah, I mean, it is inarguably a better spot for Derrick Henry this week than last week, just in terms of ownership, because he will just be at an absurd discount on DraftKings and even FanDuel, really, relative to where he was in week two. So definitely interested in getting on there. And I also like the Tennessee Titans minus 2.5 points at Minnesota as well, because I think Tennessee is a good matchup for, well, the Vikings are a good matchup for the Titans. Our next game, we have the Robert Woods Bowl. We have the Los Angeles Rams against the Buffalo Bills. And I find the Rams to be one of the more interesting teams of this slate, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the backfield there. Don't know if Malcolm Brown's going to play. Don't know if Cam Akers is going to play with his cartilage. And then, you know, Robert Woods, who really does continue to beat out Cooper Kupp, but then we of course have the Tyler Higbee 3-touchdown performance from last week to consider, and perhaps no quarterback has played better through 2 weeks than Josh Allen. I think this game has a lot of potential fireworks, Colin.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I guess one of the concerns for the Rams, I think for me, was just like second consecutive game traveling across the country to the East Coast, and so didn't feel like the optimal spot for them for like a 1 o'clock game. And I guess the other piece is just trying to understand which of the wide receivers might get shadow coverage. And so I think on the Rams side, I probably would be interested in them only as a bring back in tournaments. And I definitely think that the way that the Bills are running this offense, Like Josh Adams, Stephon Diggs, John Brown are definitely always going to be viable tournament plays. On a week-to-week basis, maybe hard to predict those guys, and so definitely not targets I'd be looking to in cash games. At the price point, I think there are better quarterback plays than Josh Allen, but I also do think that would make him kind of secondary in terms of ownership on the slate. So going to wait until our final ownership projections are updated to really try to make a decision where I'm leaning on Josh Allen. I do think he's very in play, but there are other quarterbacks that we prefer a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Allen is he's definitely going to get a little bit of that recency bias stuff, but I would be kind of interested in playing Diggs and Brown as one-offs, especially Brown at 5,700 on DraftKings. I really do. I like that price, and I think that they are interesting one-offs, even if the projections, you know, don't absolutely love them at their given salaries. Our next game is Cincinnati at Philadelphia. And the Cincinnati passing tree, I think, is actually going to be pretty useful for this slate, because if we think that John Ross just gets straight up benched, we have T. Higgins for 3,900 and then Drew Sample for 3,500. And we've already seen through two games that the Bengals, you know, when they get down 10 points or so, they're pretty much completely abandoning the run game. They threw 61 passes in that Thursday night game against the Browns. So, you know, if we're a little bit low on the plays, if we're a little bit low on the run to pass ratio on dailyroto.com, I could see Sample and Higgins being like very solid, you know, tournament salary fillers, basically.
Yeah, I personally think Higgins is a little too flimsy a salary filler, sure, but I think the role is definitely still at risk. We did see him get more usage last game, but it's not like he did a ton with that. And he's still, even if he is playing, he's still going to be at best third, probably fourth as far as the overall target tree. It does feel like Burrow was looking to Sample immediately and had been looking to their tight end throughout the first couple games of the season. So I think he would be more the interesting play. Between him and Logan Thomas, do you have a preference, just straight up raw projection, which guy you prefer?
Oh, Logan Thomas. I mean, Logan Thomas is a total stud, I think.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, the real interest is, I mean, definitely the Eagles side of things. Miles Sanders, one of the highest projected running backs that we have on the entire slate. Very reasonable $6,400 price tag on DraftKings. So he's going to be, I think, one of the plays that we want to get most exposure to at the running back position. As far as stacking the Eagles, I feel like I still struggle with it just because Wentz has historically spread targets around so much. You've seen some interchanging usage this year between Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, which, you know, obviously have some concerns there. You have Jalen Reagor, who's kind of getting increasingly healthier as the season goes on. And then DeSean Jackson kind of seeing progressively more snaps as well. And so I think, you know, those are the guys you'd be thinking about stacking. But because there's four of them and none of them really stand out as a screaming value, it's hard to really make up the mind, which, you know, makes me feel like Miles Sanders and the Eagles D is probably where I'm going to end up getting most of my exposure this game.
I actually really like the idea of, you know, fighting the recency bias, right? And you know, really trying to boost up Zach Ertz a little bit, stacking Wentz with Ertz and DeSean Jackson, who continues to ramp up his snaps. You know, we got that report that DeSean Jackson's snaps were going to be increasing every single week. I would expect that full PPR, we are both going to see a nadir in ownership and price tag for Zach Ertz this week against a really bad Bengals defense. It's a very sneaky spot, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely fair. And it's not like he hasn't been involved. So we're not talking about something where he's getting like three targets a game. He's still getting seven. And he just hasn't cracked like close to 10. And so that can easily swing as well, or you get the touchdown variance.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. All right, moving to our next game. I don't expect there to be a ton of fantasy relevance in San Francisco and the New York Giants. We might have Nick Mullins starting this game. Seems like the backfield split in San Francisco is going to be Jeff Wilson Jr., Jerick McKinnon, Jamichael Hasty might get added off of the practice squad for San Francisco. And other than Darius Slayton, I don't really want to play any Giants.
Yeah, this game, 40-point over-under in this game, so definitely not a lot of overall fantasy points expected. It did seem like until they signed Devontae Freeman that there could be some value traps in the Giants backfield, and maybe there are still some value traps in the 49ers side of things. I think that we have Jerick McKinnon projected pretty conservatively, about 30% of the team's rush attempts and 11% of the team's targets, and he's a negative value kind of at that threshold. But there is a scenario where he plays a little bit more than we're projecting, specifically if they don't end up playing JaMychal Hasty very much. And so I'm going to probably increase the volatility setting on Jerick McKinnon to see if he gets into any of my lineups there, just because he does have that big play potential. They are favored in this game, but I do think, yeah, it's not one of the spots that you're looking really to attack, especially with this over under. Probably want at most one player from this game in any of my lineups across DFS sites.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, I could see Jerick McKinnon and Darius Slayton kind of both getting there. And I guess Evan Engram as well. You know, Evan Engram is a guy who we have at times thought that Evan Engram was, you know, like a stud player, like a guy who, you know, could be one of the five best tight ends in fantasy football. He had those runs with Eli actually last year where he looked really good. And at, you know, at $5,000 on DraftKings, wouldn't surprise me if he churned out, you know, 24 DraftKings points or something like that. So yeah. I can see it, but again, not a game to attack. We are going to go ahead and head into our second break here on the Daily Roto Hour. Still have lots of stuff to cover. We have Chicago, Atlanta, you know, one of the times where we're definitely going to be thinking about rostering Mitch Trubisky, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Definitely something that we have to discuss against Atlanta. We have the new look New England Patriots to discuss as well. We do need to touch a little bit on the George Kittle, Jordan Reed situation before we move on to Chicago and Atlanta. If Kittle were to sit again, how are you thinking about Jordan Reed this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that will depend on the popularity across DFS sites, but we did see him lead the team in targets, play, you know, a really strong allotment of snaps in his first game without George Kittle. So I think he would be kind of squarely in the conversation at the tight end position, at position we're looking to pay down at considerably. And so I think that projecting him for, you know, 6 to 8 targets again would be a pretty reasonable threshold. And that is definitely going to put him in that conversation. Obviously, if Kittle does play, then you're not really looking to read at all.
I think that probably just about does it. I definitely have to admit to being chapped after getting off Jordan Reed last week due to the 15 to 20 snaps report, and then he scores 2 touchdowns. Never a fun spot to be in. Moving to the Chicago Bears at Atlanta Falcons, just sort of seems like the Atlanta Falcons are going to be the team that just gives it up to everyone this year. You know, Russell Wilson has an amazing game. Dak has a 40 fantasy point game. You know, everyone got there basically except for Michael Gallup against the Falcons. So, you know, we have Trubisky with Jimmy Graham, Allen Robinson, you know, maybe David Montgomery finds himself in play this week. How far are you willing to take this Bears matchup this week, Colin?
I'm definitely willing to take a piece of it. And I do think what we see is the ownership on the road teams in these shootouts ends up being lower than on the home team. And that was the case in the Atlanta-Dallas matchup as well. Almost 2 times the ownership on the Cowboys guys as the Atlanta guys, despite great spots for both teams. And obviously Dallas ended up getting there, but for a while it looked like the Atlanta onslaughts were going to be the ones that you were looking to have. Definitely think that the price tag of $5,700 on Trubisky is pretty enticing. And I think the only hard part is just figuring out if or how to stack him. Allen Robinson's $6,200 price tag is very appealing for a guy that's seen 28% of the team's targets through the first 2 weeks. But beyond that, it's kind of been guys getting, nobody else has been getting peppered. It's just like a couple targets here and there to all the different weapons. So it's hard to draw up a double stack. You know, Tariq Cohen's price is $4,300, but he hasn't seen the consistent usage we'd necessarily expect. But I know that like running, passing, catching running backs versus Atlanta is something that people historically have targeted. And so that would be another guy that you could kind of mix into the double stack conversation if you wanted to double stack Trubisky.
Yeah. And the reason, by the way, why that is happening for the Bears is they are really, for whatever reason, I guess because they have 1900 tight ends on the roster, they're just playing a ton of 12 personnel this year. So that means that Cole Kmet, Demetrius Harris, those guys are getting a bunch of snaps over Anthony Miller. And then they're rotating Miller, Mooney, Wims, and Patterson out at that other wide receiver slot. Obviously, they're playing Tariq Cohen as a wide receiver sometimes. So it really is just kind of a nightmare for those guys. On the Atlanta side, we have to ask the question, should we be projecting Calvin Ridley for more targets than Julio Jones? I think the answer is yes. I think that we have seen enough over the last 2 years, right? Because it's not just this year where we've seen, you know, Ridley basically playing better than Julio Jones. I am ready to say Ridley is the number one, or at least it's a 1A, 1B situation for those two guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the 1A, 1B. Kind of feels similar to Juju Smith-Schuster and Diontae Johnson in Pittsburgh, where you're not going to be shocked if going forward, on a game-by-game basis, it's kind of flipping back and forth. So I think that makes sense. Julio, his game logs don't look as exceptional. He did, have the explosive week one. He dropped an easy touchdown pass in week two. And so that would have changed things up for Julio as well, just as far as raw projection. Their prices are a little bit elevated. There's some really, really attractive spots to target this week that I think we like more. So these guys are secondary tournament plays to me, but definitely like them as well. And I know that you haven't been buying necessarily into Russell Gage, but he continues to see a pretty high volume of targets on a consistent basis. The field continues to not roster him. And so some of my best teams last week were, Atlanta, Dallas, game stacks, where I was able to get Gage kind of in that mix. And so I think that's another guy that is still worth targeting, that his price has come up at 5,100, but it's definitely not, in my opinion, as high as what his usage has been.
I think that's fair, especially because I mean, you are going to see him at like 0.9% owned, and even in single entry and three max stuff this week. So I really like that idea. Our next game, I hope you have some good and specific Homer insight for us here, because we have the Las Vegas Raiders against your New England Patriots. And I was kind of just looking at ways to really make Cam Newton's projection reasonable. I gotta be honest, I don't really know if I can do it. I think that he is gonna lead the New England Patriots in rushing attempts, and those goal line carries, they look so automatic. I mean, is naked Cam like the third best quarterback play of the week?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, the way that the offense is set up, and you can tell just when they get to the goal line, they're not considering other options. And eventually they'll probably mix in some QB options and things like that. But right now it's Cam, and let him figure out whether or not he can run it in or whether or not they want to throw it. And so Cam is definitely going to be a hard guy to stack. I think the Patriots would for sure prefer to run the ball, and they weren't necessarily afforded that luxury in the matchup against Seattle. And so you saw that they had to get pretty aggressive. Julian Edelman put up a career high in receiving yards. And so they're willing to get aggressive with Cam if they needed to, but their preferred approach is for sure going to be very, very run heavy. And I wouldn't be surprised in this matchup if the Patriots team that you see is closer to what you saw in week one, where it's, an onslaught of rush attempts, Cam leading the team in rush attempts, and then a diverse kind of, not a diverse target tree, but a narrow target tree, but a low volume of pass attempts. So I definitely think he is consistently targeting Edelman, Harry, and Damir Bird. If I was going to stack, those would be the three guys I would consider. But it probably is just going to be a low passing attempt offense, except when they're matched up against really strong offensive teams that can force them to keep their foot on the gas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also N'Keal Harry at 4,200. I mean, he is right now, he's 12th in the NFL in targets. He is a 29% target share of this Patriots offense. I anticipate he gets big time overlooked this week. He hasn't scored yet, had the fumble in week one, and also he just like doesn't look that good while he's playing. So that is definitely part of it. But I think that he is going to be a big buy opportunity this week.
Yeah, and I would be more interested in him in tournaments. If you're looking for a value wide receiver in cash, I could just see a scenario where he gets five targets if the game goes the way the Patriots want. And that's definitely plausible. There is some upside there, but the floor is exceedingly low on him. Do you have any interest in the Las Vegas side of things here? I think we'd really only be looking at Josh Jacobs and Darren Waller. I think Waller, $5,700. So it is a pay up at tight end, which kind of conflicts with the natural desire to punt the spot a little bit, but he is projected as one of the top tight ends of the slate.
So Darren Waller right now has a 38% market share of the Las Vegas Raiders offense. I mean, I don't care if you're playing, the 1985 Bears or whatever. Like, I'm going to be interested in playing you, especially because he's only 5,700. And I mean, it's not like the Patriots defense is the Patriots defense of last year, right? Like, I mean, they've been giving up points. Well, I guess they gave up points against Seattle, and then they played Miami in week one. So who knows
Yeah.
what any of that stuff means. But like, I would expect Waller to see 11 targets, catch seven or eight of them. Like, I think he is a super strong play this week.
Yeah, I agree. And when you compare him to tight ends, there are some value tight ends, but when you compare him to other wide receivers, which really is what he is for Oakland, definitely makes the price a little more appealing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one. All right, moving on here to, I think, again, a very interesting game because we have the Carolina Panthers without Christian McCaffrey. We have the Los Angeles Chargers who are going to have Justin Herbert starting at quarterback. We have the, this is basically the dream matchup for running backs, and the Chargers actually have two fantasy viable running backs now with Josh Kelly and Austin Eckler. What is your approach to this game?
Yeah, I think the first thing I've just been trying to figure out is how much the overall like offensive philosophy will change for the Chargers with Justin Herbert at quarterback, and whether or not, you know, from the start of the season, kind of our preseason baselines, we have them projected for a really, really high run to pass ratio. And a lot of that was with Tyrod Taylor projected at quarterback. And so I guess that was the first thing I was trying to wrestle with for this game is whether or not they would still be a run heavy team. I know they would for sure prefer to, and it seems like a matchup where they would be able to. But I think that was, I guess, one of the questions I had as far as how we were thinking about projecting the quarterback change and how it might impact the offense as a whole.
Yeah, I think that seems fair. I mean, I think that our main issue with this game is I think there's just like there's some chance of systemic failure with both of them, right? Like of the Carolina Panthers offense, just, you know, without those chunk plays to McCaffrey, those easy 4 to 6 yard plays, like who knows, right? And I think the Chargers, I guess I'm less concerned about that stuff with the Chargers. Do you think that Kelly is like too thin of a play for single entry and three max?
I would feel like it's a little thin for the price is down there enough where I think it's viable in like 20 max, but I don't think it would be guy I would be looking for single entry three max.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's fair. I actually expect that he is going to get owned by people. Like I think that he would kind of get gassed up. Another guy that I'm interested in this game, specifically with Herbert playing quarterback, is of course our boy Mikey Ariards, Mike Williams, 4,300 on DraftKings. I expect him to be a guy I play a lot in three max.
Yeah, and then I think on the other side, you know, a lot of the attention, I mean, should go to Mike Davis. He's priced at $5,100. I think there are going to be some questions coming in on his overall usage, how much goes to like Trenton Cannon type, and so. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, but also the wide receivers for Carolina are priced pretty reasonably. I know you were talking in Slack about how you preferred DJ Moore pretty strongly over Allen Robinson. Projections have Robinson ahead there, but at $6,100, DJ Moore has been the overall wide receiver one in that offense for the last 2 years, and nothing has changed there. Kind of coming into this matchup where they should be behind, they should be throwing more, and obviously you don't have Christian McCaffrey there, so you could expect maybe even some more red zone looks to go DJ Moore's way.
We left off talking about the Chargers and the Panthers, and I actually think that DJ Moore is going to be the guy who ends up gaining the most with McCaffrey out. I think his short area targets are going to really improve, overall with McCaffrey out. One of the questions I have, though, is how much do you think they play Curtis Samuel as a running back?
Yeah, I mean, I just wouldn't expect to see him playing at running back very much, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't mix in more like jet sweeps or whatever. So I guess that's a really small part of the equation for me on the overall slate.
Yeah, I mean, he is hitting some optimals, but I would anticipate that probably is going to change when we get to Sunday. I'm giving him about 9 to 12% of the Carolina Panthers rushing attempts, which, you know, again, it is something I think probably more to think about for single entry and three max. But the guy who I'm for sure making manual adjustments to in this slate is going to be DJ Moore, because I just think it's possible we are under projecting him, and I want to make sure to get exposure to him. Our next game, the New York Jets at the Indianapolis Colts. So this is my take, right, is that Jonathan Taylor is going to be, you know, the fourth or fifth best running back in fantasy football this year. He's $7,000 on DraftKings. I really want to make it a priority to get exposure to him in all formats, you know, way over the board, to try and get leverage on Jonathan Taylor this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. I'm curious to see how people react to the price tag, just because it is a big increase from what we saw last week, where he was the highest owned running back on the entire slate. And he could be the highest owned running back again on the slate with the Colts 27 point implied team total facing the Jets. Taylor got 26 carries last week, and Nyheim Hines was not involved very much at all. Some of that game script, but it seems 85% that the Colts are going to be in a very good game script again this week. And so I definitely think that the usage will be there for Taylor. you're going to have to hope that he cracks 100 yards and, you know, finds the end zone at least once, possibly twice, to pay off that price tag in tournaments. But just as far as raw projection, he is one of the best values at the position on the entire slate.
Yeah. So are you kind of the mind that do you feel that the projection is fragile at all? You know, they play more Jordan Wilkins, they play more Nyheim Hines. Obviously, this matchup against the Jets, it's about as easy as it gets. Like, what are your thoughts on, you know, how fragile his projection might be?
I don't think the projection is fragile at all. I think the inputs are accurate, and I expect to see that usage. It's just you're not expecting a huge passing role for him in this matchup, and so you're going to have to get there on the ground, and you're going to have to get the touchdown variance in your way. And so I think that's where you could potentially see it fail, is if, I mean, the same reason that the Derrick Henry play failed last week was you just get a low volume, really efficient passing game out of Phillip Rivers, and you get touchdowns spread around there, and he ends up having a fine but not exceptional outing. But like you said, I think that's probably the edge case. And so it's just, part of it's just going to depend how quickly the field continues to pile on him. Because, like, I mean, I don't think that the projection is very fragile at all. I think all the inputs are really solid.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. The one cheap guy who I want to tout here for the Indianapolis Colts is going to be Michael Pittman Jr., who I actually didn't really like as a prospect, really thought he was going to be, you know, kind of a very average NFL player. Certainly did not see a route to him starting in year one, but he looked good last week, out-targeted Zach Pascal last week. I think he is ahead of Pascal and Mo Alie-Cox in the hierarchy for the Indianapolis Colts. I really think there's a case to be made for playing him as an MME sprinkle in week three.
Yeah, I think definitely. And, you know, he does fit kind of the value threshold that we're looking for. And then I think in tournaments, T.Y. Hilton is going to be probably 1% after what he's done the first couple weeks. And so maybe that's the way that the Taylor play fails, is if T.Y. gets there with a couple big ones. But the other thing, I guess, on the Jets side of the ball is if you do end up playing some of this game, you're kind of projecting the game script where the Jets are behind. And so I think trying to understand, well, one, if Jameson Crowder is going to be back, if he's going to be active, and then, I mean, they did lose Breshad Perriman last week to injury as well. Chris Herndon didn't see the same spike of targets that we had originally forecasted. And so there could potentially be some value wide receivers on the Jets. Nobody you're super excited about, but didn't know if you had any insight into Crowder and if he was to sit again, who you think might pop.
I mean, I just am not interested in playing any of these guys. Like, I, like Herndon. Herndon was just like a stone cold blocker in week two. And really the thing you hate is when you play guys from a team that's trailing is when they give up in the second half, and the Jets gave up, right? They weren't really trying to score points. And you can't have that if you're playing guys with that angle. So I mean, maybe, I guess the one guy I would say is Braxton Berrios got like a larger target share than projected. He's 3,600. He's probably going to play that slot role if Crowder is unable to go. So Braxton Berrios, 3,600, whatever. I mean, I probably made worse plays, but not super into it. Tampa Bay and Denver, seems like Chris Godwin is going to be back for Tampa Bay. Seems like Leonard Fournette is the lead back in this backfield now. Really, the only guy I'm interested in playing on Denver is Noah Fant. Maybe a little bit of KJ Hamler. He is the dead man at 3,000, but overall, not really wanting to play any Denver Broncos, even though they are at home.
Yeah, definitely tough overall. It's hard to even want to play the Bucks, to be honest. You know, their team total pretty high, like 24.5, and they have been pretty run heavy to start the year. Some of that is just getting into the right game scripts, and then I think the other thing was just stacking them is we still don't really know what the offense looks like, because we haven't had like a fully healthy Godwin and Evans playing at the same time. And you've got the you know, two tight ends, Howard and Gronk, that are eating into each other a bit. And then Scotty Miller. So that combined with the timeshare in the backfield, I mean, it's going to be tough to roster the Bucks despite the team total this week. I do think KJ Hamler is definitely in play at $3,000 if you're looking to punt. And I know that, you know, not a guy that you can necessarily, his projection is for sure fragile because we've only seen 1 week of him, but with Cortland Sutton out, you know, you expect Judy to command the most targets alongside Fant, but then he's probably the clear number three and it is the guy that can break some big plays. So I guess like $3,000, I'd rather maybe punt with him than Braxton Berrios just as an upside play.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure, especially because I don't think Berrios gets there on one play. I don't think he scores a touchdown, but I think Hamler could get there on one play, which is something that you definitely like to see from your cheaper guys.
Yeah, what about Melvin Gordon? 19 carries last week. If Lindsay's out, like, you expect all the work.
He's in play. Yeah, he's in play, especially because I think that he's going to be a clear part of their passing tree. We got to move on to the two games of the week, though. Detroit-Arizona. Arizona team total of 30. Detroit team total of 24.5. We are going to have Kenny Golladay back this week, all indications are. Our two highest scoring projected players, including quarterbacks, are Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. So, I mean, how can we fade these two absolute studs? I mean, they seem and Kenyon Drake, they all seem like really incredible plays.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to add to that. Like, the value on Drake as far as the overall RB on the slate, I think, is pretty good there. He hasn't really got there yet this season, but there is going to be a lot of attention on the Cards passing attack, so he's kind of a natural pivot there. Obviously, Hopkins, in the first couple weeks, what you've seen with the connection with Kyler Murray, like, there's no concerns there. Kyler showing a lot of rushing upside as well, so definitely entering, you know, the overall, like, top three quarterback at the position conversation from a fantasy purpose. And the price is high, and I think the hardest thing for me is just at that price tag, trying to figure out how to stack Kyler, whether or not I want to play him just as a single stack, or whether or not at that price I need to mix in some double stacks there. And so I think that's, like, the thing I'm struggling the most with Arizona, is just not whether to get exposure, but how to approach that overall exposure.
So I think that you definitely want to use him as a single stack because he's running so much. So he can get 30 and Hopkins can get 20, and then no one else can be over 10, right? Because he's just running so much. Like, he's not even like, obviously he's completing a lot of passes, but he's not completing that many passes. So I definitely think you want a single stack, and there are good bring backs too, right? TJ Hawkinson, Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones. I don't think that you want to try and play the running back roulette yet. I mean, maybe you could play a little bit of DeAndre Swift. That would be the one I would play because he's playing the passing downs, but I think that you could stick to those three guys as bring backs.
Yeah. Where do you sit? I don't think we've ever talked about this, but where do you sit on the wide receiver versus cornerback debate? And is that anything that would scare you off Golladay? Is just the value too good at 6,200 as a bring back in this offense?
I mean, I, like, certainly I would, like, maybe think about it, but, like, you know, it's like, I will play guys against good cornerbacks all the time. Like, so the reason you don't do it is because you don't do it because you think the quarterback won't throw to them, but Stafford is just going to launch it to Golladay. Like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about any of these cornerbacks.
Yeah. And then are you looking to stack the Detroit side of this game? Because I think it's pretty obvious it'll be a popular game, but I actually don't think that the Detroit guys are going to be very popular overall as a stack. So I think that would be the other way where, you know, they have a 24.5 point team total themselves. And if Stafford's able to match Kyler, or if the Cards are more diverse, and I guess, are you thinking about game stacking both sides, or are you just looking at Arizona?
So Mahomes and Lamar are not on this slate. So my biggest leak ever, which is playing Lamar and Mahomes too often in MME, those guys are gone. So Stafford is going to make my mix for sure. We got to cover our final game here, the crown jewel, Dallas, Seattle. Which side do you like to stack more, and which Cowboys wide receiver scores the most fantasy points this week?
Yeah, so I mean, the stack more side, I guess, is fairly easy, just because, you know, for the most part that the target tree is more narrow between Russ, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. I know that Russ did throw 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers last week, but just as far as the overall targets, a lot of them are occupied by those two guys. So it's a little bit easier to stack Seattle from a branch perspective. And then they are the higher implied team total, with the highest team total on the entire slate, kind of tied with the Cards. So I prefer stacking Seattle, and flip a coin though at Dallas. I mean, it's going to be something that frustrates people on a week-to-week basis, as far as, like, the Cowboys don't care which of these guys do well on a weekly basis, and they're all great wide receivers, you know, like a 1A, a 1B, a 1C type of situation. Amari Cooper, definitely the number one receiver, kind of the guy that you would expect to be most consistent. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Michael Gallup outscored CeeDee Lamb this week, or if Gallup was the overall wide receiver one for the Cowboys this week. So I think it's going to be like the Rams offense that we saw a few years ago, where you had Woods and Kupp and then Cooks before he was totally dust. And I feel like Gallup is going to end up playing that kind of Cooks role, where he's going to have 3 or 4 weeks this season where he ends up kind of breaking a slate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that does sound about right. I mean, I am again wanting to play CeeDee Lamb on FanDuel, where they like didn't really adjust his price at all. I think on DraftKings, the fact that Lamb and Diontae Johnson are the same salary, like Lamb would have been huge chalk, but I think the fact that Johnson and Lamb are the same salary actually is going to mean that you're going to get a pretty good discount on Lamb ownership this week.
Yeah. And then what about Dalton Schultz? First game starting a tight end for the team. He did see 10 targets last week, led the team overall in terms of targets. And do you feel like that was matchup specific? How much are you kind of willing to boost the market share of target projection for Dalton Schultz on a 1 week sample?
I boosted it a ton. I think that he is just going to play the same role that Blake Jarwin did. I think that's actually my biggest observation from week two, is that Blake Jarwin was not a special player, not a special athlete, and Dalton Schultz is pretty capable of playing that exact same role. So I think if you're looking for a way to get some low-owned exposure to this game, that's definitely a way to do it. So obviously Dallas and Seattle and Arizona, Detroit are going to garner loads of ownership. So my favorite game stack of the week is the Rams and the Buffalo Bills. The Bills have a super narrow target tree. You're really only interested in Diggs and Brown. That makes those stacks very easy. Also on the Rams side of the ball, for me, it's really just Woods, Kupp, Tyler Higbee, not worrying about the secondary targets at all. I again think, you know, think that makes it relatively easy. The Bills have some key defensive injuries from week two. And I'm really going back to the well with those guys.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the tough things this week, we talk about game stacks. You're looking to hit three or four positions at once, and some of the other games that might be attractive, you're not necessarily going to be able to do that. So I think Cam Newton is a great individual play, but that game is going to be generally a tough one to game stack. And so I think the other game that I'd be looking to game stack is just that Chicago-Atlanta game. And I specifically think that the value side of things is a little bit tighter this week than it has been the first 2 weeks of the season. So you're getting material savings on Mitch Trubisky and Allen Robinson. And so I think that is a game that you can kind of stack up and then still bring back the expensive but less popular Atlanta Falcons weapons in this game.
Yeah, I really like that, especially because I know it's so gross, but Jimmy Graham, David Montgomery, Anthony Miller, like you're going to get those guys in an environment where the Bears should theoretically be pretty much passing for all of the game. Like I would imagine that Atlanta is able to get up on them pretty quickly. And also, just I love this narrative that Trubisky just loves to win people $1 million. Like he's like a three-time millimaker winner because he runs, especially in those spots. Like he's much more likely to run in games where Chicago is trailing. So if you had to pick the second Bear to stack with Trubisky and Allen Robinson, which guy is it?
Yeah. So I mean, if I had to do it, it would probably be Anthony Miller, just because he's the guy that's on the field most consistently. But the value threshold on Tariq Cohen, I think, would be pretty intriguing as well. So in a three max, what I would typically do in that type of situation is, you know, kind of diversify throughout the stakes, maybe put your best team in the $150 three max. And then in the $20 three max, you just swap out like one or two pieces there. And so that's how I would approach that overall situation.
All right, everyone, thank you very much for watching the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. We've really enjoyed going game by game all the way through the main NFL DFS slate on Sunday. Of course, good luck to you guys. Hope that all of your lineups and your bets cash, and we will see you back next week.